Extremely happy right now. I've finally figured out, after much searching, how to make the quality of my recordings much, much better, which hopefully you are enjoying now, because I've been searching far and wide trying to figure out why my program that I use for recordings sounds so ungodly shitty. And I found the answer. It's very simple. I just needed to open a new project and set the sampling rate at a higher one. Pretty simple, pretty no duh. But the fruits of that discovery are very, very, very sweet. I feel like the next thing is going to have to be some hardcore dedication to setting up some sort of RSS feed. Yeah. And so I've got some coffee, and I'm ready to start the new show. I actually had already made a 25-minute clip that I'm going to have to redo, sharing in the pain and frustration of that scenario with the Scarborough dude. Many times that's happened with him. I'm sure Jake has encountered it a few times. Just very, very frustrating to have such gold ripped away from your hands. And aside from that, this new episode is going to feature a new structure to it. And this is sort of birthed after talking with people who gave me feedback from my last shows, particularly the Scarborough dude. And so I'm going to set these shows up as if it were a chapter book, meaning that I will have each segment where I have a consistent topic denotated at the beginning by a bell, which this bell in this episode is actually the bell that was used in Fiona Apple's most recent CD, Extraordinary Machine. The title track from that song, from that album, features this bell. And it's definitely appropriate to use that bell for this episode, as you will find. So, I guess that's the real important information I need to get out at the beginning of the show. And so this is chapter one, simply titled Intro. And chapter two will follow. Chapter two, A Quick and Important Amendment. If you noticed at the beginning of the podcast, there was a new theme song, and it's something that I made really recently, today. Today being Tuesday, November 16th, and I'm really happy with it. It turned out pretty well. I'm not the best singer in the world, but the harmonies were basically what I heard in my head, and reverb works wonders, as does a chorus effect, for the little things that usually are off. But I really liked the song. I think it was cool to put together. I like the syncopation between the drums and the guitar on the second part of the song that sort of leads into the actual show. And I just wanted to make a quick mention that that was me who made that song, and that it was just an idea that came to my head the other day when I was, biking or something, as most ideas do find me whilst biking. So, just wanted to put that out there real quick. Chapter 3, Caffeine and THC. This past weekend, I'd gotten a hold of this drink. It was a coffee drink that had been infused with THC extract, shall we say. And it was a very, very cool experience ingesting this drink. The person who I got it from, I have gotten things from before in the past, similar type of edible items with THC inside, and they weren't particularly strong or potent, and it was sort of, it was enough to feel different, but it wasn't enough to take me to another plane, and that's like, you know, the Nirvana song, I'm on a plane, that's what he's talking about, drugs. And so I wasn't expecting much, and I wasn't too intrigued by it, because I had had different type of edibles, like drinks and actual like food items, cookies and stuff like that, and it wasn't too much stronger than, no specific item was stronger than the last. And so this most recent drink I had gotten, and you know, I just kind of put it in the refrigerator and decided that I would do it on Sunday and just sort of ride around on my bike or play some music or whatever I felt inspired to do, with whatever level of altitude I was able to gain. And so Sunday morning came around, and I sort of unsacrimoniously decided to drink it, having mostly forgotten about it during the week. And so I brewed a French press, to deciding that I'd like to drink some coffee with it and kind of water down the drink itself, because the drink was very, very creamy. The thing about THC, if you're not aware already, is that it's a fat-soluble chemical, which means that it binds to fat. And so that's one reason why, if you're taking a drug test for employment or whatever else, THC usually will stay in your system longer, because you actually have to burn the fat off that the THC binds to in your body. Whereas something like alcohol, or I think even cocaine, is heptically metabolized, which means that your liver breaks it down, and you usually pass it just through, you know, renal functions like urination and stuff like that. But THC is different, and so the fact that it's metabolized in that way through fat burning is also the reason why it can be put into foods. And so basically, if you take some marijuana and put it into a liquid that is high in fat content, such as vegetable oil or, in this case, heavy cream, the THC will actually leave the leaf of the marijuana, and it will bind to the fat, and so it will effectively strip the THC from the actual, I don't know, whatever type of marijuana is in the brew, and then you can just drink whatever you're making and achieve the same effects. And so the coffee was very thick and creamy, and I didn't really want to drink it just by itself, because I thought it would make me kind of feel fat if I drank like a big old thing of sweet, creamy chocolate coffee tasting drink. And so I drank it, and it had a pretty pleasant taste, pretty earthy. I've done something called bang before, which is basically milk and THC, a similar sort of extraction process, and it tastes, I don't know, there's sort of a metallic kind of earthy taste to it, and it was pretty well covered by the creamy, sugary coffee taste, but it was still, there was still a hint of it. And so although I didn't expect much, I thought that it was pretty significant that I could taste something that reminded me of bang, which thus far is my most I guess consummate and earth-shattering marijuana experience. So I drank it and sat around for about 45 minutes, and wasn't expecting much, as I said. The coffee that I had mixed the drink with, I think the caffeine from that started to kick in before the actual THC did. And, you know, I was just sort of, I don't know, I expected something, but I got far, far more than I could have ever even hoped for. It was an amazing experience. I'm not one to prop up I don't know, the benefits of drugs, because I think there's a very fine line between you know, doing them productively for some kind of constructive reason, which even that I feel kind of wary of saying, because it's kind of, I don't know, there's a fine line between doing them just to get messed up and then doing them with some sort of constructive purpose in mind. And there's, I say it's a fine line, but I feel like it's hard to, it would be hard to justify what I just said to anybody, but that's the way I feel about it. There we go. I feel comfortable in saying that. That's how I feel. And so, this drink, it was just amazing. It was like the marijuana that was used to for the extraction was low-grade marijuana, what's known as mids, and sometimes that type of THC and the cannabinoids and everything that are in it, they can cause sort of a lethargy, and you can feel this sort of like it's a very body experience, not very cerebral. And so you just kind of feel tired and maybe not so. I guess it's easier to space out in a way. You can get that sensation of your head floating on your shoulders or like a body vibration and stuff like that. That's the type of thing that you can look forward to most of the time when you get this type of THC. But the caffeine that was paired with it was the perfect counterbalance. I mean, if you think about it, if you have a substance like the THC that was used in this drink, and it has a tendency to make one lethargic and lazy. And then you take something like coffee that has a tendency to make people feel on edge and sort of angsty, anxiety-ridden. If you put these two juxtaposed to each other, then it sort of balances out. I mean, you don't feel the lethargy, but you feel the cerebral effects of the THC, which cause you to like see things from different perspectives or look deeper, for me anyway, better depth of analysis, better understanding, so on and so forth. And then you take caffeine, which allows for stronger focus and I guess more, I don't know, overall concentration. The combination of those two elements made my Sunday in the early part of the I guess afternoon, very, very, very fun, to say the least. Chapter 4: Fiona Apple and Her Amazing Artistic and Personal Transformation. So, after this drink really started to kick in, I had gotten an intense urge, because I had thought about her the other day, to watch some Fiona Apple interviews. And it's sort of what I've been doing when I get interested in a person. Whether they be a musician or a writer like Dave Eggers or anyone, if I want to know more about the person, I look for interviews, because I find that the more I watch interviews, the more real these people become to me, the more I can have a relationship with them, albeit from a very pronounced distance. So I watched a bunch of Fiona Apple videos, and this was all while continuing to fall deeper and deeper into this caffeine THC hole. And it was really, really amazing. I mean, the amount of focus that I had and the depth of analysis, like I was talking about, was just so directed at Fiona. And I was just watching videos from her from like the early 90s, like the, well, the mid 90s, really, when her first album came out, Tidal. And I'm gonna, throughout this podcast, I'm gonna cut it up by using only Fiona Apple songs, and I'm going to choose three songs from her three albums that I feel best categorize her transformation that I'm going to describe here in a second. So her first album is called Tidal, and it's very, very angry and like very dark kind of. And I watched a bunch of interviews from around the same time that album came out, and it was just incredible to watch the way she portrayed herself. And she was extremely thin, and she was very sharp and sort of like people called her a loose cannon and stuff like that. She said that anyway, and she just exuded so much anger, and it was just very apparent in the way she carried herself and the way she dressed and the way she spoke. It was just very pointed, and I felt like, when she was talking, she was like very defensive, and it was like amazing to watch someone who was so obviously hurt walk around as if they weren't. And I felt like that was really what was going on. Her past is pretty sordid, is the word that I've chosen in my mind whenever I think of it to describe it as. And you can look on Wikipedia and find out specifics, but she was in a like a specific school for emotionally disturbed children when she was younger, and she actually had gotten raped when she was 11, I believe. So like a lot of tragic things happened very early in her life, and a lot of her lyrics like reflect these things, and it's just amazing to just palpably feel just so viscerally, like just every emotion that she was feeling. Like, I felt in the moment that I was watching all these interviews, I felt like sort of like just a mirror, and so like everything that she was doing I was like reflecting back and therefore feeling completely. And this was definitely because of my state of mind, but also, I mean, I found it to be true even watching interviews after the fact, after Sunday, and listening to her music. It's just like, it's amazing to see like how no one was responding to her how they should have, and they just sort of, they thought, just as a whole, I guess they thought that she was just, you know, a bitch or something, but it was so much deeper than that. And so from her first album, Tidal, to her second album, Win the Pawn, which actually has the longest title of any album in history, Win the Pawn, it has about a 90-word titled album name, 90-word, yes, and the transformation that she goes through from Tidal to Win the Pawn is sort of a small transformation. I don't think those albums were too far apart. I think she released her second one in the late 90s, maybe 97, 98, 99, somewhere in that range. And so, you know, she was certainly, I guess, happier. No, I wouldn't say that. No, I take that back. She was more or less the same. And interviews sort of reflected that. I actually watched an interview with her on Howard Stern today, and it was amazing to watch, because again, I felt like Fiona was on Howard Stern, not because she liked Howard Stern, but just because she felt like she could do it, and she probably disagreed with a lot of what he said, and how, I don't know, he's very blatant, and I found what he said very, like, disgusting, and, you know, nothing, it didn't even serve a purpose as, like, a artistic outlet. I felt like, I just thought, like, he was somehow had gotten to be where he was and is as a radio show host just because he attracts attention because of how nasty he is. And so he was asking Fiona like a bunch of nasty questions. And one interesting thing that he asked her was if she wore dresses. And she said no, she never did, which she does now. I think that's very significant. And she also said that she was a vegan and that she worked out a lot, which is exactly what I felt like she was doing. Watching her perform live and watching how skinny she was and everything, I just thought, you know, here's a girl who wants control. This is a person, not just a girl. This is a person who is so desperate for control that it's like, it's exuding. Her want for control is visible in like every aspect of her life. I could tell that she probably was very controlling of her diet, and that she exercised a lot, and it turned out that she did, and it was just amazing, because I felt like, ever since I first liked Fiona Apple and heard her music, I felt a very strong connection to her and her lyrics and everything. And I've gone through a period in my life where I controlled my diet like extremely closely, and I still do to a degree, but it's a lot healthier than it was maybe, I don't know, 5 years ago, where I was extremely restrictive and extremely skinny as a result. And so that was just amazing to witness, just the, I felt like she was being very, very honest in a very, very dishonest way. Like, she had this shell, and she was so hurt and so angry and like so just dejected by society. And, but on the inside, I knew she wasn't like that. I could just feel it. I'll also post links to all these interviews that I'm talking about, if for no one else's benefit than my own. You might remember back, I think maybe in the 99 MTV Music Awards or something like that. She won an award, but she got up on the stage and she gave this really angry speech about how the world was bullshit and that no one should care about what celebrities care about or try to look like them or try to please them or anything, because you just have to be yourself. And this I felt like was like kind of characteristic of her whole outlook on life, was that like she understood what was wrong with the world, and instead of like trying to grow and build herself above it, she wanted to destroy it. That's sort of how I felt, and that's sort of what I saw in her first two albums and all the interviews that happened in between them. But ladies and gentlemen, with the advent of Extraordinary Machine, something happened, something changed, something was very, very different. Fiona Apple is one of the few artists whose albums I have gone and bought all at the same time. The only other artist who I've done that for has been Radiohead. And so I bought all of her CDs at once after having read, an article in Rolling Stone, just like with Sean Lennon, about her new album, Extraordinary Machine, and thinking that it sounded like it was going to be really, really good. And it was. But it was just so, so different. It was very, very upbeat and very light and very confident and very controlled, but in a very mature way. It was very, very different. I could tell that, you know, if you listen to her newest album and listen to her previous two, it's just, it's night and day, you know. She categorized, she documented and, like, chronicled her transformation as a person and as an artist through all of her music. And her later interviews were, like, just captivating. I could tell that she really understood, like, what love was. And she was talking about doing all of her creative works for their own, doing. She didn't feel like she had to, you know, exercise her pain or sadness through music anymore. She could actually make a song and it could be beautiful and it could be a good song, but it didn't have to be fueled by like anger or hatred or any sort of negative emotion. She could use positive emotions and feel good about it. And that was really what I felt like she had achieved, and what Extraordinary Machine sort of stands for in my mind, is that, you know, she has had this past, and this is her on the other side of, like, the fence, so to speak, you know? It's like she overcame her flaws and everything, and it's just perfectly captured in her music and perfectly captured in all the interviews. So trust me, I promise, I will put links to all those interviews that I watched. I think there's probably at least 10, and, you know, again, you don't have to watch them, it doesn't really matter, but if you're ever interested and ever get your hands on a caffeine THC drink, I strongly recommend watching them, because it's really quite an amazing transformation to witness. And I will say also that Fiona now wears dresses, seemingly almost exclusively, and it's no coincidence. She's embraced herself. And, you know, she's better for it, and it's just apparent and obvious in every facet of her being. And so I strongly encourage everyone listening to listen to her music, to watch her music video. She has a really good one with Zach Galifianakis. And this clip will be followed not by a bell, which I think might be getting kind of annoying, but by a song from her first album, Tidal. I'm not really sure what song yet. I'm going to have to do a little bit of searching, but I know that I'll find the right one. And it will be maybe your first time listening to her, maybe not, but either way, please listen with an open mind, listen to the lyrics, listen to the words that she chooses to use, and listen to the music, and enjoy.
Pretend. understand. Once my lover, and now my friend. Oh, you creep up like the cloud, and you set my soul at ease. Then you let your love abide. Your grace enrapture me. But well, you know I'd be insane to ever let that dirty game recapture me. Maybe a shadow box, the baby.
Chapter 5, Leonardo da Vinci. After I watched all of my Fiona Apple interviews, all of my Fiona Apple. After I watched all of the Fiona Apple interviews that I did, I was again struck by the urge to watch something about Leonardo da Vinci. Sort of inexplicably, I'm not really sure why I had the desire to, but I thought it would be really, really interesting because it would just, to get to know someone from 500 years ago, on a more intimate level, who was as fundamental and, you know, key in human development, at least intellectually, I thought that it was a good time to explore that, seeing as I was so concentrated on everything that was being delivered to my brain from my eyes and ears. And so I watched this this documentary, which I will certainly put links to because it's one of the best things I've ever seen, just in terms of, you know, human potential, what it can do, what we can do, what anyone is capable of. There was a really good quote, I think. If this isn't from Da Vinci, he definitely embodies the same spirit. Actually, this is, I think, Albert Einstein. He said, "Think the genius and you shall become it." And that was sort of Da Vinci's whole idea. He challenged himself all the time to be learning and to be, you know, actively pursuing knowledge, no matter what the social implications or anything. And, you know, he was a brilliant sculptor, a brilliant painter, a brilliant scientist. I mean, his scope and his reach seemed to be endless. And the only thing that really stopped him, it seems like, was finally dying. And it was just amazing. I think one of the most amazing and touching parts to me was when... or the fact that Leonardo da Vinci didn't really get started with his major life's work until age 30, which I thought, like, I felt that was very interesting. First off, it's archetypal in the same way that Jesus Christ didn't get started with, like, spreading the word of his ministry until age 30. So in and of that, that's pretty interesting. But then also, it gives me sort of, you know, stay. It makes me feel, you know, like I can... when I made that clip about being frustrated in the first episode, you know, it was because I felt like being 20 already, I should have some sort of magnum opus already started, or some sort of clear vision of where I'm going, or even like having the finitude of having already accomplished something great. And, you know, people like Da Vinci, I feel like he having not gotten started until his 30s, sort of breaks the mold of what I tend to think of, like, sort of requirements of people who do great things. You know, it seems like, you know, you hear about Beethoven or Bach or anyone who's sort of a prodigy in whatever they might be good at. And it seems like just from the moment of birth, almost the moment of conception, they've been great. And it's just, you know, it's been a continuation of greatness throughout their entire lives. And so to have someone like Da Vinci who didn't really start till 30, it sort of it puts my mind at ease because it makes me realize that I can keep refining myself and keep learning and keep moving and keep aiming, you know, for something that is in the future and not have to worry about wasted time in the past or, you know, trying to structure time in the present too much. And I feel like it's a pitfall for most people when they try to do something, may it be, you know, learning a new instrument or learning a new language, anything really that's new. Sometimes people get discouraged, the people in my circle, they get discouraged before they even start just because they feel like it's too late. And it's important to feel like, it's important to never feel like it's too late, because some shit that people think is only as true as the thought itself. But that's sort of going off on a tangent. So Leonardo da Vinci, his life story, man, inspiring in a completely different direction as from Fiona. It's just like the things that he was able to discover. He learned about the nature of light and the nature of flight, watching birds and drawing diagrams of how things worked, you know, in terms of flight. Like, no, like, I learned about how flight works for birds by watching this documentary. and they sort of turn their wings in a corkscrew motion to get lift, and then a lot of their flying is actually gliding. And so simultaneously, while this show is talking about all of Da Vinci's life projects and everything, they're also going through and looking at his original drawings and testing a lot of his inventions, because the things that he invented were like 500 years at least ahead of their time, some of them, meaning that, for instance, he invented the first tank, and he never had the means of building it, but they were able to build, you know, a replica to see if it would work, and it did. And he'd also made a parachute, which they made a replica of, and that worked, which was basically a big canvas pyramid, and a man was carried up to like 10,000 feet on a hot air balloon and then let go, and he actually was able to sort of like glide all the way down on Da Vinci's parachute, and that was pretty amazing. And Da Vinci had also made a glider that was tested and proven to be successful. You know, it was just amazing, all these inventions that he had never had the means to actually see to fruition, 500 years later being put to the test and actually succeeding. So amazing, amazing. I will link that to death, that show. I think the only qualm that I had about this show was that I felt like, because our society, as progressive as it is socially, which if we compare ourselves to ourselves, it seems like we're kind of backwards socially. But you know, if we compare ourselves to Saudi Arabia, we got it going on. But I felt like the show made too big of a deal about the fact that he might have been homosexual. I felt like they really pressed that point, and it didn't really have any bearing on, you know, the true matter of the show, like what it was trying to convey. Whether or not he was gay was pretty irrelevant, because he didn't like write great love poems that were sort of ambiguous. He didn't necessarily draw men in a way that seemed to make him prefer them more than women, because he drew both, but there was never any sort of like celebratory kind of, you know, image of man with any sort of sexual connotation to it. And so that kind of bothered me, because I felt like that was just our society interpreting something from 500 years ago with like a very biased and critical eye, because I just didn't understand what the point of it was. It doesn't make a difference. They were sort of saying it in the way that it was a mystery and that it needed to be solved because it would bring some sort of closure, knowing whether or not he was gay. And I just thought that was irrelevant. It didn't matter. One more interesting point was all of the medical advancements that Da Vinci brought about through autopsy. Through the Vatican, Da Vinci was able to autopsy bodies from people who had passed away recently. And there was one man who Da Vinci autopsied, and he said that he had died the sweetest death, and that if he could die in such a way, he should consider himself lucky, because he just sort of, you know, slowly passed away, and just, you know, the breaths became longer and more deep, and then they stopped, and that was it. And Da Vinci found, in looking through his arteries, that there was like a silt substance in all of his arteries, and they sort of had obstructed the blood flow. And Da Vinci didn't understand what this was, but he thought that there must be something in the blood that was causing this obstruction. And so, unknowingly, Leonardo da Vinci had discovered cholesterol and heart disease about 510 years before modern medicine had. And the most amazing thing, I think, about all of Da Vinci's discoveries and findings and everything was that the majority of them were not published. Most of them weren't, counted. Because right around the same time that Da Vinci was really getting a lot of his major work done was the time of the French Revolution and the Renaissance. And even though liberal ideas and radicalism were sort of rampant, a lot of his stuff was heretical in a way. Around the time that he had discovered what would be called heart disease, he was actually accused of necromancy with the dead, and so he was disbarred. Is that right? The right word? I think so. He He was not allowed to continue autopsying bodies because there was the suspicion that he might be a necromancer. And so, you know, he was way, way ahead of his time. And when that happens, usually the majority of the people around you can't handle it. Because usually, you know, very well-attuned minds are very forward-thinking. And so they're going to have to step outside of the conventions of the day and look beyond everything that is sort of the status quo and sort of break it, you know. And so these people are often cast as villains and, you know, people without morals or anything like that. Everything like that. And so that's a sad thing, you know, because there are definitely parallels in our own time and day. People who have great vision, but are obscured and belittled in spite of it. And, you know, that's sort of all I wanted to say about the Da Vinci clip. I'll put some links up in the notes because I think it's also another thing worth looking at. And hey, you can make a day of it if you want. You can watch stuff about Fiona Apple, watch stuff about Leonardo da Vinci. You can drink a nice little caffeine teach drink. And in the meantime, it's 8:21, November 16th, and I have to go to Georgia State because tonight is an observation night, which means I get to go and observe the sky. It's part of a mandatory thing for my lab for astronomy, and at the same time, it's something that's very enjoyable, something I've done before, and so I have to go do that. Au revoir.
Rio, do around you. But by the time I'm close.
Welcome back. That last song was Fiona Apple from her second album entitled Win the Pawn. And that song is called To Your Love. And the song before that, the first song I played, was also Fiona Apple. And that song is from her first album called Tidal. And that song was called... What was that song? Shadowboxer. So I hope you enjoyed those two songs. And again, I'm going... Trying to... You know, pick songs that sort of, you know, highlight her emotions and her changes. And so, all right. Chapter 6. All right, babies, as Terrence Young would say. Another hour has evaporated, and I can't believe it. And I know it's only actually been 46 minutes or whatnot. But I was going to wrap it up really quickly and leave you with a clip from the upcoming news segment featuring the interview with Naveed that I got today. Today is Thursday, November 18th, and it's actually 9:23 p.m. right now. That's right, it's actually. And it was a real quick sum up the days since the 16th, the Tuesday that I last recorded. And here I go. On Wednesday, I had my counseling session where I met with a counselor who was, basically just trying to, it was like the initial intake. And so she really just asked me like one question, and then I exploded with like, a million in-depth analyses of my own person. And, that was fun. It was amazing to see. I think if there's one thing I can do very well, is give my own opinion of myself. And so we met for about 30 minutes, and there was not a single space of silence. I needed no help speaking about myself, talking about my shortcomings, talking about my, I don't know, my obsessions with cleaning, why I think I have those, just a lot of psychological things. I'll definitely fill you in as the sessions get deeper. And as there's actually something to talk about, because like I said, this was basically just a intake kind of thing, and so she was kind of just familiarizing herself with me. Although she did take a page and a half of notes, which I thought was interesting. She wrote very fast, because perhaps you might think I speak fast. Sometimes I think I speak quickly, and especially if I'm talking about myself, because I know exactly what to say. Anyway, yeah, she took a lot of notes. And, later that night, Brittany came down, my girlfriend, and she was going to the Weepies concert that night at the Variety Playhouse, and I had decided, because feeling good vibes with her, that I would go with her. Usually I don't like to go to concerts, because for some reason I notoriously get stomach aches. And so I went, and we ate at this awesome place called Alibaba's, which was like a Mediterranean hero place kind of thing. And it was good. I've never had that kind of food, so it was cool. All finished off with a Turkish coffee, which, by the way, feta cheese and Turkish coffee creates the distinct taste and olfactory stimulant. It smells and tastes like throw up. Very bad combo, but kind of savory at the same time. So I went to get a ticket for the Weepies concert. And right as I walked up to the box office, because I hadn't bought one previous to the night because I thought I would leave it up to chance, someone gave me a ticket for free. A nice Korean man. I think his name was like Lewis Kim or something. And he stopped me before I even was able to get the full attention of the attendant behind the box office glass. And he said, "You need a ticket?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he gave it to me. And I was just sort of in shock. And then... I gathered myself, and I went and I said, "Hey man, thanks a lot." And so that was pretty cool. And so I got to go to that concert for free, and it was a good concert. Very good musicians, the Weepies are. And it was cool to be with Brittany. I don't think we've been to a concert together. Although we have had opportunities, we've always foregone them. I just wanted to leave you today with... a clip from the interview I got with my friend Naveed. I mentioned in the last episode that I wanted to do that, and today I took all my equipment and everything up to Georgia State, and we sat at the top floor of one of the community rooms that looks out with like a 270-degree view of the city. very pretty, and asked him a bunch of questions, and he gave me a bunch of very, very good and thoughtful answers. And he's a really cool guy. I really like what he has to say about everything. I love the way he speaks. I think that he's very elegant, and I think that he's going to be, if he's not going to be someone important in this life, then he already has been someone important. He's an old soul. I can feel it. And I just wanted to go ahead and introduce you to what my vision was for the interview of Navid. And per the suggestion of my girlfriend Brittany and Navid, I'm going to break up the interview, which was an hour and 15 minutes long, into more manageable bite-sized chunks. So this is going to be the first installment, and it's just a quick little clip about Thanksgiving and sort of what it's like from his perspective, and a little bit of background info from him about him is he's from Pakistan, although not, he was born in the United States, but his parents, father was born, I think, in Burma, and I guess his mother was and is from Pakistan. And so he's got a really cool perspective, and I really wanted to capture it because I feel like he's sort of frustrated with the fact that he's got all these ideas but no ways of really enacting them and making them into action. So without further ado, I'm going to leave you with the Navid clip and then one more Fiona Apple song from her latest CD, Extraordinary Machine, and it's called Better Version of Me. And it definitely sums up her transformation, I think. And it's upbeat and uplifting. And without further ado, Navid and then Fiona, my very favorite special people of the week. Thank you. And tune in next week for the next episode of Molt. And please comment. Send me in some information about... Send me some feedback about what you think about the show. Let me know. And I'll keep them coming. So until next week, Jamata. Thanksgiving is coming up, and that's the break you're talking about. So do you guys do anything to recognize the Thanksgiving holiday, or is that like a mostly American thing? Because I've noticed, especially being at Georgia State, that like a lot of people who are of different ethnicities, like they like, for instance, our astronomy teacher, he said that he was going to enjoy the holiday, but, you know, it's nothing, it's not a Chinese thing, you know, it's not something that he is accustomed to being excited or having any sort of, like, you know, if you're a different ethnicity, it's like, this is just like a dead week, kind of, because it's not like you have a specific holiday that you're celebrating, it's like you're, the people around you who are native, you know, what will you guys do?
Well, you know, technically there are very few Native Americans left anyway. But, I mean, in the same way, I mean, yeah, we don't really have a religious holiday or any kind of cultural holiday. But, I mean, you know, because it's grounded in a in an event, you know, in American history. And, of course, even the event is a little fictitious. But, I mean, why not celebrate anyway? I mean, technically, because what it's based on, what it's grounded on, what the meaning of the holiday is something that crosses cultures, I would say. You know, Thanksgiving. I mean, you know, it's something, you know, like the giving of thanks is very important in most religions. You know, gratitude, you know, is a big deal, and it's important. I mean, even, you know, if you know, religious books, the Quran, you know, which I'm more particularly familiar with, you know, in many places it says that, you know, that God's very respondent to gratitude. And gratitude is very important. So, I mean, in that way, I mean, I think it's a good reason to celebrate anyway. I mean, whether it's some, you know, and also, you know, having lived here all my life, I mean, I would say it's a cultural holiday for me, maybe, you know. You know, I mean, I feel pretty attached to it. You know, I've, you know, been through enough of them, and it's been pretty cool, you know. And I mean, we've actually have had one Thanksgiving feast one time, because actually one of my uncles actually decided, hey, you know, the whole turkey thing sounds pretty neat, you know, why don't we do that? Yeah. So we actually had one. It's been a while though. We've only done that once, from as far as I remember. I think when I was younger, I don't really remember, but I know when my family lived in California, like on my dad's side who lives there, he is a really, like, he's really into cooking. In fact, he actually manages a retirement home, actually. And so it's, you know, he's really, he likes the whole, public, you know, thing, like relation, not exactly public relation, more like just the service kind of thing, where you basically, you know, just caretaking to people. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's pretty, so because of that, you know, he likes to cook and he likes to, you know, have parties, entertain people, you know. So I think we did used to have more, you know, dinners and things around. Even I think, I'm not sure about Christmas, I don't remember, but I think we did have Thanksgiving, but I don't really remember. But, you know, he liked to cook for us, so that was always a joy. Yeah, so, yeah, Thanksgiving is cool in my book, I guess.
The nickel drop when I was on my way beyond the Rubicon. What did I do? And of the games that I can handle, none of one's worth a candle. What should I do? I'm a frightened, fickle person, fighting, crying, kicking, cursing. What should I do? Oh, after all the folder all. Take a good day without a bad one. Don't feel just a smile till I had one. Where did I learn? I make a fuss about a little thing. The rhyme is losing to the riddling. Where's the turn? I don't want a home, I'm doing that. Home is where my habits have a habitat. Why give it turn? Oh, after all the folder rolling, hauling over cold stops, what did I learn? You'll agree, he is coming, I better